Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Mexico had a plan. Two of three CONCACAF nations stumbled out of the gate in the World Cup, but the big one, Mexico versus Germany, went CONCACAF's way. 1-0 Mexico. Bracing stuff up and down. If Lozano and Chicharito had been a little more clinical, Mexico might have scored two or three more. If Timo Werner weren't so selfish, Germany might have gotten a couple. It was a good game. Barely heard from you yesterday, Greg. Imagine you were pacing around, probably holding a cup of coffee with a stirring stick in it. How was your Sunday?
It was tense, man. That was a tense game, and I feel like Mexico did everything they could to make it even more anxious. That was the most frustrating 70 minutes of 1-0 soccer ever played.
There's a lot to get into, and we'll get into it here in a second. A little later, we'll have an interview with Sebastian Soto, the U.S. youth number 9, who has a chance of filling in for Josh Sargent for the U-20s. You won't want to miss that later in the episode. And before we get to the game, the Mexico-Germany game, which will be the lion's share of our discussion here, first let's quickly deal with the talk of the town, which is everybody bashing Landon Donovan for doing a Wells Fargo ad and calling U.S. fans to cheer for Mexico. What do you make of it, Greg?
So Mexico's biggest fan. I don't care that he did the ad. It's a pretty bold, corporate shill situation, him holding the flag. So he took some criticism for that. I think the criticism for that falls still in the sports banter realm.
Yeah.
It quickly went off of that reservation when Donovan called someone out for not essentially respecting their own Mexican heritage.
Yeah, Bocanegra.
Yeah, so at that point, now it's no longer in sports banter territory. That is a really strange angle for Donovan to have taken with it. And out of bounds. That's totally out of bounds for Donovan to be saying you're disrespecting your heritage.
In that forum.
If that's said between a couple of buddies who know each other really well, okay, fair enough. But it sure seemed like it was a Donovan lecturing someone on how to be Mexican.
Yeah, it seemed like a panic. It seemed like a panicky move on Twitter. That's what it looked like.
Yeah. That's where I thought the whole thing stopped being sort of just ridiculous, dumb entertainment and started being oh man, Donovan, yikes.
Yeah. I don't really care what Donovan says. I find that debate kind of boring. But since we are a U.S. men's soccer podcast and we're spending a good deal of time talking about Mexico during this World Cup, I feel some need to weigh in and embark on a journey of self-justification, which is sort of my life story. but I guess there are some people who argue you must root against Mexico. I know you're in a little bit of a different situation. Your father is Mexican. You've been rooting for Mexico and the U.S. since you were a wee boy. I'm not. I've never rooted for Mexico, really. And there are some who argue if you're a USMNT fan, you just can't root for El Tri. It's a terrible thing to do. And
my betrayal, saying it's a betrayal.
Yeah, it's a betrayal. Right.
Yeah.
And on a certain level, I admire that sort of the purity of that kind of sports tribalism. But I'm just not cut out that way. I'm a little more dispassionate than that. And I like the way Mexico plays. I think Vela and Herrera in particular are a joy to watch. And I want CONCACAF to do well in the World Cup. I stand by my college sports conference analogy, which you have disagreed with, but I pry it from my cold, dead hands, Greg. I think just like as an Iowa fan, I root for Wisconsin and Minnesota in bowl games. I'm going to root for CONCACAF at the World Cup. And after the results of the weekend and earlier today, Belgium solving Panama, it sure looks like Mexico's the only team that's going to go through. So I'm rooting for Mexico. And at a minimum, I'm interested in how Mexico does.
Yeah, man. Like who you like. No one's going to put an asterisk next to the fun you just had yesterday watching Mexico play. It honestly wasn't fun for me. It felt like you know, it was very reminiscent of 4 years ago watching the U.S. play, where every kick of the ball is like, you just feel the life draining from you. But that final whistle was a real intense relief.
Yeah, I bet it was. And there's one other matter to sort of address here, which is like whether Mexico's success is going to make it more difficult for the U.S. to attract dual nationals, which has been a battle. I think we have a basically zero batting average on so far. When Mexico wants somebody, they get them thus far. Do you feel like, just, you know, being sort of clinical about it and dispassionate, Mexico doing really well? This was a memory for the nation, maybe the greatest win in Mexico's history. Is a whole new generation of dual nationals just going to be even more committed to playing for Mexico as a result of this?
To be honest, I think yes. I think it's a small window, essentially. So like kids of a certain age will take this one with them. In other words, I think kids who are going to be forced to make a decision imminently will now be leaning towards Mexico, partly because of sort of this magic victory. Again, assuming Mexico doesn't then squander it all away in their next two group games. But yeah, that's the kind
like
of moment.
Spoken like a true fan of El Tri.
So it is like a really like a cultural touchstone for Mexico fans. So yes, I definitely think that if somebody was on the fence, a 16-year-old, 15-year-old, this is definitely enough of an emotional cue to push them over towards Mexico full time.
Yeah. I suppose that's probably true. The three that come to mind are Jonathan Gonzalez. He's already playing for Mexico, so that ship has sailed. Efra Alvarez is already playing for Mexico, and seemed to be perhaps waffling a little bit on that. Maybe this seals the deal for him. I mean, he was taking pictures with a Mexican national team shirt on seemingly every other day for the past month, even before this game. So I don't know if you could call this the clincher. And then there's this kid named Alcala, I think, who's like 11 or 12, who's just supposed to be insane. Grew up in California like the other two and is already playing for Mexico. So I don't know. I guess it's so hypothetical for me to think that there's going to be new generations of Mexican-Americans playing for Mexico that it's hard for me to feel like it's a really bad thing.
I don't think it matters at all. I think when you had Herc on last week, he made a really good point that all of these like elite talents, that we're seeing coming up from Mexico, potentially in the U.S. system, whether we're talking about the development system or just in the U.S. lineup for the men's senior team, like would be essentially wasted. That style of player wouldn't be set up to succeed in the U.S.'s system. So,
yeah,
like the Venn diagram of players that are eligible for both teams who would succeed in the U.S. and who would have their mind changed by this Germany result, it's probably a really small number.
Yeah.
Small overlap there.
Okay. Well, we've dealt with that. It seems to be all over the internet, people having these debates about this kind of stuff. What about the game? What did Mexico do to beat Germany?
They fucking did it, Bells. So, we talked about the game ahead of time. I don't think a lot of people sort of saw Mexico's tactics coming. Did you... Is this sort of what you were expecting to see?
I mean, I'm not really the authority on that kind of thing, but no, I don't. I'm not sure what I expected. What did you expect, and how did this differ from it?
So I expected them to honestly just play like a free flowing, tons of interaction, like changing places, interchange, like throughout the field every time they got the ball.
Yeah.
And they just go for it. And then when Germany got it, Germany would be Germany, and Mexico would essentially have to try to stand up to waves of German attack, not nonstop, but just Germany's going to come at you and you're going to have to stand up and defend it. And then Mexico, I thought, would go back at them. And I think for the first 9-10 minutes, Mexico did have a mixture of attacking methods where they did have some of that positive flowing interchange. And they also had a couple of real like rapid counterattacks.
Mm-hmm.
But I think after like 10, 12 minutes, it turned into strictly counterattacking. And I don't mean in a bad way. I just mean the way Germany were attacking just left it where Mexico could be incredibly vertical with their breakout and just be running it. I don't know if I want to call it a disorganized German backline. It looked like a Germany team that was like playing like in an over 30 men's league. Like no one was back to defend once they lost the ball. Like their shape was horrendous.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the quote from Mats Hummels that we don't need eight guys in the attack and we had to defend with three, something like that, interpreted as a dig at Toni Kroos and Mesut Ozil.
Well, if that's who he was singling out, then that's fine. But I feel like it's got to be a dig on the manager,
Kadira.
Like
Kadira too. Yeah,
like the manager's the one who sent those guys out there. Like, so if Hummel's saying they shouldn't have been on the field, I get that. But Mesut Ozil shouldn't be the guy who's breaking up counterattacks.
Right.
It should be a different player. So, but that's exactly what it looked like, didn't it? Just Mexico able to just run at two or three defenders in 60 yards of space. It was amazing to watch play out, and it was frustrating as hell to see Mexico honestly execute it so poorly.
Yeah, well, they executed it very well until they got into the box, essentially.
Yes, that last pass Chicharito, I thought, was really poor inside of 20 yards, which is usually sort of his special zone. But yeah, man, I'm like getting worked up thinking about those three-on-twos. Like, you never see a three-on-two. You love to see you get a three-on-three in that much space, and you're ecstatic.
Yep.
And they were just running three against two and sometimes not even getting a shot off. And it was like, I was sure, Bells, I was sure that Germany were going to come back and win that game 2-1 in the last 10 minutes. And it was just going to be like a tragedy of Mexican missed opportunities.
Yeah, that would have really sealed the deal for Mexico as victims of the world stage. But alas, it didn't happen that way. Germany couldn't figure it out. Julian Brandt hit the outside of the post with a pretty wicked half volley from 25 yards. Let's talk about who wasn't poor. I mean, I agree. Chicharito had a crucial role to play in the goal they scored. Mexico scored.
Yes. Yeah. Great little hold up layoff, which can be overlooked and stuff in those kind of sequences.
Yeah, well, it seemed to me that, I mean, Mexico had, I counted six dangerous counterattacks in the first half hour, and from the 25th to the 35th minute, they may have been in that, like, sit-back counter mode, but Germany wasn't getting anywhere near the Mexican goal, and then that little spell was capped off with the goal, which was a Hector Herrera tackle on Sami Khedira, and then Hector Marino just pinged it right out to Chicharito in the center circle. And he was sprinting back to the center circle. One touch layoff to Guardado, two touches, and it's back to Chicharito off to the races, who collects himself with a few touches and slips the ball to Lozano, who takes two touches as Ozil skates by him. And then beats Neuer at the near post. Ecstasy.
Yeah, even that, like, I was, it looked even then that, like, Lozano had somehow lost the shooting opportunity. So
yeah,
the pass beat every German defender, and it was just Lozano against the goalkeeper. But his first touch was, like, a little bit off, so then he had to beat the defenders again. Oh, man, and I was, like, ready to throw something again. And then he embarrassed those defenders and, oh, man, Bells. Like I said, I just get worked up. This is so great.
So I didn't think Lozano's the hero because he scored the goal, but I didn't think he looked that good in this game. He and Chicharito weren't ruthless the way they could have been.
Right. That's exactly what it would be described as. They really lacked that side. And they're all heroes. Like, everybody who played in that game now is an absolute hero. Rafa Márquez came in and didn't really accomplish anything, and he's now even more of a hero. But no, I think the cold analytics side of it is Lozano didn't look very clean.
You know who did look clean?
Carlos Vela.
Oh my gosh, he was so good. Until he came off in like the little bit before the hour mark. I thought if anybody like sort of signaled the intent of Mexico to rise to the occasion and go, you know, toe to toe with Germany, it was Vela carrying the ball forward. finding passes, or and Hector Herrera. I thought those two were just marvelous.
Yeah, no, they look really good. I'm really hoping that he continues to get the nod. I don't know what he was taken out for at the hour mark. Again, I actually kind of disagreed and still, to an extent, disagree with Osorio's tactics in the second half. You can say the result proves he was correct, and the result's amazing. But I don't think Mexico's set up well to absorb pressure, and he basically... I thought their best chance was to continue to counterattack like they were at the beginning of the second half and nick the second goal and then like be good home and free. But they took out everyone who was going to give them that chance and just decided to sit in their own box for 25 minutes.
Well, Vela came off right after that play where he and Chicharito were in a 2-on-1. And
yes.
Chicharito put that pass just to – I mean – That's on Chicharito, right? He's got to play that to Vela's feet, not to a yard and a half in front of him.
Yeah, I 100% think that's the case. He doesn't have to play it to his feet. He needs to just play it so that it dies after rolling by that one defender. So you just hit it so that it rolls 1.5 yards past him and then essentially dies in the space. Vela just runs into it in stride and passes in.
There's no way Vela doesn't score in that situation if that ball gets to him.
I mean, yeah,
there's a way, but I mean, you got to give it really, really high odds of a second goal there.
So yeah, Chicharito's pass just can't roll. It was just too heavy. Like, it wasn't necessarily too far ahead of him. It was too heavy. So it shouldn't have just been, like, kept rolling past Vela. So yeah, so then Vela came out. I'm sure that wasn't why Vela came out, but I really don't know what the thinking was other than, again, substituting defense for offense.
Yeah, and I thought maybe it signaled that Vela's in the plans for the South Korea match, and they needed to save him a little bit. I mean, hopefully that's the case. He gave it his all for that 60 minutes.
Yeah, that's true too. He was man marking. A lot of people had pointed out correctly that he was essentially man marking Toni Kroos in defense, and really minimize the impact Kroos was able to have in the game and sort of changed what Germany were able to do. It really just turned into a Germany trying to whip in crosses from the right sideline for most of the first 60 minutes.
Do you think Germany underestimated Mexico? Or is that just garbage narrative stuff?
I think that's just narrative stuff. Like, Germany might have thought they'd have an easier time sort of combining through Mexico's injured back line than it had, but it never looked like Germany weren't trying. I'd say it never looked like Germany were like taking it easy. Mexico really just had an amazing, amazing game, like full concentration, full energy from everyone on the field.
Yeah. And boy, Juan Carlos Osorio deserves credit, doesn't he? That counterattack was like a machine until it got to the box.
Yeah. So again, like, I don't know if he recognized that it was on or if that was his plan from the beginning, but it's one of those things where it's kind of like the U.S. against Panama in qualifying. Like, that shouldn't have been on. Like, it shouldn't have been that easy for Mexico to attack as freely as they did on those counters. So Osorio had the team set up well to, I think he had the team really set up well to defend against Germany. And I don't think it was just like, it wasn't just heroic individual efforts. Like, the shape was really good. They did make Germany settle for things that Mexico had an easier time dealing with. They channeled most of the attack down the right sideline. Maybe they invited that to bring Kimmel up and to open up that space on the counter. But that just, it just was looking at like a script that they just repeated over and over again. Germany attack down the right, Mexico break centrally and then free Lozano out down the left side.
Yeah. There was another time where Miguel Layún on the right side got a chance, and he didn't cover himself in glory either. To me it looked kind of like a giant piston, you know? Like, Chicharito comes back, and then boom, like the two wingers are off to the races, and then Chicharito joins them. It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it really was.
Powerful and wonderful to watch, combined with that crowd, that heavily pro-Mexico crowd. It was some great television. I actually watched it with, we have a German friend here, she and her husband, and they're little girl came over and we all watched together. And I sort of started to feel bad because I was rooting for Mexico. But I think this friend of mine doesn't really care that much, to be honest with you. So
okay, that's good. Like it's just almost hard to be excited because on one side people are again that intense emotion. On the other side, it's like a funeral. So good on you for keeping it bearable.
It's such a different perspective too when you have like four stars above the crest. It's like none of this really matters. Nothing matters anymore. It's like who cares, you know?
Well, and that goes towards the one of the probably the biggest ramification of this game. Again, assuming Mexico don't squander this, is they'll probably avoid Brazil in the round of 16. And like honestly, I'm sure Germans don't love the prospect of having Brazil in the round of 16. But for them, it doesn't seem like the tournament-ending draw that it would for Mexico.
No, they're gonna crush their other opponents. It seems, don't you think? I mean, it's gonna be South Korea and Sweden on the butcher's block.
It sure looks like it. Did you get to watch that South Korea Sweden matchup?
No, I didn't. Did you?
It was drab. I don't think either team's like best sequence even touched like the average Mexico or Germany sequence. I mean, it's like switching from Champions League to USL. Like,
quality. That's a big switch.
I
watch a lot of USL, and I can tell you that's a very large switch.
The crispness and just the sharpness of everything, the movement, the touch. Sweden and Korea are in a different atmosphere. But that doesn't mean that Sweden can't somehow put together a performance where they just frustrate the hell out of you and, the same thing they did to Italy.
Yeah.
But no, on paper, Mexico have to love this matchup and love the position they're in.
Yeah, I mean, you got any other thoughts on Osorio? Like, I was really impressed. You know, there's that clip of him doing breathing exercises after they scored the goal.
Yes.
He's doing Cristiano Ronaldo breathing.
He's over there literally making sure that he doesn't, like, expire on the sideline of the World Cup.
Yeah. Gotta love him. He's been through a lot.
I mean, my thoughts on Osorio is he probably jumps to the front of the line for the U.S. men's job.
Jumps that line and moves into a different line.
Exactly. He's actually now overqualified. So, no, man, just a really cool moment for Mexico fans. It's sort of like what the whole tournament is for that sort of moment.
Hard to beat a win that gets you into the quarterfinals, which has happened twice in Mexican history, right? But this has got to be the biggest win in history, right? Except for those two, the ones that put them in the quarterfinals in the World Cup in, what was it, 70 and 86?
Yeah, and I think that's right. Given sort of the no one really thinking they had a chance, the implications of the next round and all the built-in like fifth game narrative for Mexico, I think for sure this will go to, again, retroactively, if they go out and lose to Sweden and South Korea, that'll take a lot of the shine off of this win.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But the way they did it too,
it would seem like a contest of equals.
That's a really great way of putting it. And again, who knows, like maybe when Mexico do get to the round of 16 quarterfinals, like they're not going to try to play down against anybody. It sure looks like they're here to be like, we are as good as anyone else. And speaking of, like, and that's leaving some incredible talent on the bench in that game.
Oh, yeah, you tweeted towards the end, you'd love to see Tecatito on with for the last 15 minutes with Germany still chasing a goal. We didn't get to see that.
Just looking at how much space they had to operate in on the counterattack, and Germany didn't fix it at halftime. I was sure that Tecatito was going to be the player to seal the game. I thought for sure he'd come on, get two or three times running at goal and score one or two goals.
Give me Tecatito over Lozano any day, man.
I'm just desperately hoping that that's what Osorio does against these sort of less talented sides, is trots out like all of them. Lozano, Chicharito, Tecatito and Vela all in one lineup.
They could do that. Okay. Any other thoughts on Mexico? They have South Korea, 10 a.m. Central Time on Saturday. Win and you're in, boys.
Win and you're in. Win and then start cheering for Brazil. So win their games.
Oh, yeah, so they don't
have to. Make sure Brazil doesn't tank it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been weird. It's been weird. Of the front runners, you know, of the big nations, everybody expected to win or expected to compete for the final. In the first weekend of action, only France got 3 points. Spain didn't. Argentina didn't. Brazil didn't. Germany didn't.
Costa Rica didn't.
Costa Rica didn't even get 1 point. Let's talk about them. Their loss to Serbia means
they are out.
Their tournament is over. Yeah,
not mathematically, but and it sucks because they actually played what I thought was a very good Costa Rica game. Serbia didn't have too many chances. Navas did make like some huge saves right before they did give up the goal. The Kolarov free kick. But yeah, it was very much like the game Costa Rica had to play.
Yeah, you called it on the Kolarov shot from distance.
That's all he does. That's all he tries to do. So yeah, it just really kind of sucks. Like Costa Rica had created enough chances to Costa Rica their way to a win. Like they had a couple of free headers from 6 yards out, just had the wrong guys on the end of them. And yeah, now they're out. The margin's just really, really too narrow for Costa Rica.
Yeah, I thought they had – it was basically like in the first 5 minutes, they had a couple decent looks at goal, didn't capitalize, and then never really got close again.
Yeah, and that's essentially their formula, is to create one or two chances, hit, and then be really, really terrible to play against and trust that you're going to get three huge saves from Navas. So, yeah, I'm disappointed. I wanted them to be able to do it because it seems like that's going to be essentially Serbia's path as well. Serbia weren't like completely outclassing Costa Rica.
They were outclassing them. I don't know, maybe not completely, but they grew into that match and they were clearly the better team for the last three quarters of it, wouldn't you say?
Yes, but it's one of those things where are they actually doing things that Costa Rica isn't allowing them to do? So Costa Rica is going to allow you to have a lot of the ball. They're just going to dictate where you have it and what looks you're going to get, with the exception, again, of the three outstanding saves Keylor Navas had to make. So that's why I'd say no matter who plays Costa Rica other than the United States men's national team, they're going to usually look like they're in control of the match. But it's just one of those – it's like a little rope-a-dope special that Costa Rica and, to an extent, like a same kind of thing that Iceland do, to just concede that you're going to have the ball and that we will hit on an unlikely chance, on one of the two chances that we create, and that's the only path we have to get out of the group. And they didn't hit, and they are essentially now eliminated.
Yeah, I think – obviously, that's their plan, and that's the way it ideally works out. I think you're giving them a little bit too much credit. Like, Serbia, Mitrovic, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that even close to correctly, had a couple looks on goal that he probably should have put away, even in the first half. But whatever. I think we're in agreement. Costa Rica's going to have trouble because Brazil drew with Switzerland, so they need a result. Costa Rica plays Brazil Friday night, and Switzerland looks pretty good.
Yes. Yep. So that's really it. Costa Rica's tournament was dependent on the result, and almost like they needed a win, not even just a draw. So now they're just here for the party.
Yep.
They're worse places to be for the next month.
Yep. Just like Panama, that result is in. They fought valiantly for the first half against a massively talented Belgium side, but that moment of class from Mertens, a volley from the right corner, if you're facing the goal of the box, just marvelous. And then Lukaku added two more, and Panama's not going to come back from a 1-0, let alone a 2 or 3-0 deficit, so...
Yeah, and once Panama are down 1-0 and trying to come back, that's actually when it's going to get out of control. So,
good for them. They didn't give up seven, you know?
Yes. What I think is great for Panama and Costa Rica, and I say that like great, I don't mean this to be condescending, but the goals that they got beat on were like outstanding goals. So at least they didn't like do it to themselves. You know what I mean? At least it wasn't like they passed back into their, and I'm not saying that they're not competent to play soccer, but like, right. There's just ways to lose where you just have to tip your cap and say, all right, that goal was unstoppable. And once, you know, we're down against Belgium, that's the end of it. We don't really have a plan for a comeback here. So, and it looked like they were still almost playing with a lot of like passion and enjoyment. Panama towards the end, like chasing after just their country's first World Cup goal. So you see that level of like desire is still there.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of cool to see.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, no goalkeeper in the world is going to stop that Dries Mertens shot. And that outside of the boot service from De Bruyne to Lukaku, that's just nasty.
Yes. And so essentially they've been able to say, everyone on Panama's team can essentially still say that they gave a good accounting of themselves in the World Cup.
Okay.
So far, they've got two games left.
Yeah, hopefully they can get a goal in one of these games. England was level with Tunisia 1-1 when we recorded this, so, you know, maybe they beat England. I'm a little bit more bullish on Panama after watching that first half than I was before the World Cup started. So I actually give Panama a better chance of getting through than Costa Rica at this point.
That's true, because Panama have played sort of the toughest team they have to play, whereas Costa Rica still have the group toppers to that they now have to steal points from. So yeah, that's probably right. That's probably correct from a percentages standpoint.
Costa Rica's at like 3% and Panama's at like 3.5%.
There you go. CONCACAF.
Mexico's going to be the representative, let's just face it.
Was there a little part of you through like halftime of Panama where you're like, oh, so like turns out Panama's going to be the surprise CONCACAF side and win the group of death?
Yes, there was a little part of me thinking that. But, you know, I also wasn't surprised when I looked at my phone. I was in a meeting, I think. Looked at my phone and saw that it was 2-0 15 minutes later. Okay. You got any other World Cup thoughts? I mean, Mexico-Germany has been the best game of the tournament so far.
Yeah, and there's been good competition for that status. So, again, just awesome for Mexico and their program and their fans. And I'm sure Landon Donovan is, you know, wearing his Mexico scarf the rest of the week.
He's just blissed out in a no. Never mind. Scratch that.
He's in like a Wells Fargo conference room talking about what their next campaign is going to be. their next apology campaign.
I got a couple of short corners. You got it? Do you have any?
No, let's hear yours.
I'm ready to call it a comeback for Andrew Carleton. He had some pretty weak performances in USL through the first month and a half of the season. He's now put together two, arguably three, really good, clean, creative, swaggering performances as a playmaker in that league. He's still only 17. I think I'm getting revved back up on him. I watched his game got rained out on Saturday night, but he
in looked, progress, right? The game was in progress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At the 44th minute, right before halftime, they had to. It was delayed by 3 hours, and then right before halftime, they called it. He's looking really good, really confident. Looks quick and decisive on the ball. He's finding passes. He's spraying the ball across field. He's so clever. He's so clever. I just want so badly for him to succeed because when I saw that De Bruyne assist to Lukaku. Immediately, I was like, could any American do that? Yes, there's one American who could potentially do that. His name is Andrew Carleton. He is literally the only one who comes to mind. I mean, we're not in full-blown call him up to the national team mode here at Scuffed Global Headquarters, but I'm getting excited again. I think he's turning a corner.
Excellent, excellent. Happy for the kid.
Yep. The other one is flying kind of under the radar is a 16-year-old at San Antonio FC. named Ethan Bryant. He's plays on the wing. He got his first USL start. He got his first USL appearance, which was a start on Saturday, in a 1-0 win, and got the game-winning assist. He's a high-energy kid and looks like he likes being on the ball and is a good passer. He pressed off a corner kick. I mean, off a corner kick in his own half. Somebody took a poor touch between the center circle and the top of his own box. Pounced on that poor touch, exchanged a pass, and then hit a long ball over the top that sat nicely for his teammate, who then slotted it in. So, just another kid to watch.
USL really seems to be doing a solid job here of providing this playing platform for the kids. This is going to be a question that's not maybe for short corners, but maybe we can address it later. Do you think we're going to see a wave of U.S. players transferring overseas in the next 6 months? In the next 3 months?
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be a wave, but it'll at least be a wavelet.
All right.
It'll be fascinating to see, but I think there'll be at least a handful who make the move in the next few months.
I feel like that's going to have to be an episode we do where we actually get down and dirty into the contracts of some of these kids. And like, because if European teams can just take a flyer, like without even having to pay a fee for them and just be like, okay, we'll pay you this much per year, I got to assume that they're going to see this as a great pipeline.
Yeah, you know, I've thought about doing an episode about this, about the contracts that MLS offers teenagers and the contracts that a big club in Europe will offer and how different they are. I need to do quite a bit more reporting on it, but I think people will be really surprised how crappy the MLS deals are. There's just not a lot of incentives built in.
So as a kid, you're just rolling the dice and MLS essentially counting on people to have big eyes and really wanting to, you know, believe in themselves that they'll make it work and then end up with a big money deal later. Is that sort of the...
Yeah, but it's so much later. It's like 5 years. It's like most of these deals are 5-year deals. And there are 3 years with two years of option, but the option is the team's option, not the player's option. And you know, like we talk about the human side sometimes on this podcast. You're 17 years old, about to turn 18, and your choice, so maybe you're flying under the radar for European scouts. Your choice is between, do I sign this sure thing MLS homegrown deal and, you know, probably get playing time this year and get a shot at the first team, or do I try to trial in Europe, move to a country where I don't speak the language and don't know anybody? MLS has a big advantage on that front, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's definitely something we should do a full-blown spot on.
In the meantime, I think there are several promising players that we talk about on this podcast a lot who do not have contracts. Andrew Carlton does have a contract with Atlanta United. Obviously, he's played for them, played for the first team. But Richie Ledesma does not have an MLS contract with Real Salt Lake. Neither does Sebastian Soto, who I'm going to be talking to in a moment. And neither does Yulianez or Alex Mendez at LA Galaxy 2. And those four, with the possible exception of Soto, are, you know, sort of the cream of the crop nationally. They're all going to be in the U20 squad, with the possible exception of Soto. We don't know that about him. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with those four. Yes, sir.
Tried to tell Nick in 2012, Nick, working hand to hand and no avail. Volume 1 was too heavy for you, frail Nick. So I got lean like codeine and pills. It's the visionary in the vintage Chevy. It's been a while, but
all right. Sebastian Soto is a 17-year-old striker for the Real Salt Lake U19s. He led the nation in scoring with 42 goals in the Development Academy this past season, playing alongside fellow youth national team call-ups Richie Ledesma, Vladimir Mendoza, Luis Arriaga, and David Ochoa. He won the Golden Boot at a tournament in Slovakia, playing for the U.S. U19s in May, and joined by phone from Southern California, where he scored a goal and assisted another in a 3-2 win for RSL over Orlando City's U19s on Monday in the opening group stage match for both teams at the Development Academy playoffs. Here's our conversation.
All right, welcome to the pod, Sebastian. How you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So first question, I got to get out of the way. Who you got in the World Cup?
I mean, right now, after watching a few of the games, I like how Spain played.
Yeah.
But I want to say Brazil has the talent.
Yeah, they gotta turn it on a little bit after that Switzerland game, seems like.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was kind of a weird opening day for a lot of these big clubs.
Yeah, only big one to get 3 points so far has been France, I think.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I'll be watching. So, more immediate matter at hand is you guys got a win. Real Salt Lake's U19s got a win yesterday over Orlando City 3-2. It wasn't streamed, so I didn't get to watch. How did you guys play?
Man, it was a scrappy game. It was one of those games that was more of a hard-fought battle for the win. Mm. We went, I mean, if you were here, you would have noticed the wind is actually a big factor in San Diego. So that was kind of rough playing in that. But we went down 2-1 heading into the second half. And then, I don't know, we just got a yelling by our coach. And then we turned it on and scored two more.
And did you get the third goal? Or was it?
Yeah, the last one.
Okay. So coming up in the clutch. Was it, I heard it was a nice pass from Vladimir, your teammate, Vladimir Mendoza.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, across the box. It was nice.
Did you put it in with your head or with one of your feet?
Yeah, my left foot.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So congratulations on that. A lot of work to do yet this week, so I don't want to waste too much of your time. You guys have matches on Wednesday and Friday, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, talk about your upbringing a little bit. Where are you from? What do your parents do? How'd you get on with the Real Salt Lake Academy, if you would?
Yeah, no problem. I'm pretty funny. I'm actually from San Diego. So my family and my parents live like 10 minutes away from where my hotel's at.
Cool.
So I played on San Diego Surf in the academy. And then the first time we played Real Salt Lake was in San Diego. And I didn't really know much about their academy. I didn't know it was, at that time, it was in Casa Grande, Arizona. So
right.
They came over and played us, and they liked me when I played and like immediately asked me to come over. And I was a little shook. I was just 15 and I really wanted to do it. Like just hearing about it, I was like, okay, if I want to be a pro, this is the next step I have to take. And at that time, being 15, my mom didn't want to let me go and stuff.
Of course.
But we had a talk, and it happened in, honestly, like 2 weeks. And I was off.
So you moved to Casa Grande and lived in, like, a dorm, essentially?
Yeah, these dorms in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I drove by there this past winter, and it is in the middle of nowhere, for sure.
Yeah, man, that was one of the biggest sacrifices you have to take, is living in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
Just for the next step.
Well, it's starting to pay off for sure. I think for
a
lot of U.S. fans, you're flying under the radar. I mean, you may not know it, but there's a significant portion of fans who pay attention to up and comers. But I think even for them, you're flying under the radar a little bit. Why don't you just, I know already, but why don't you tell us what position you play and sort of describe your game?
So I am a number nine, central striker. And about my game, I would say my biggest thing that I live by being a nine is trying to be universal. Not really. I've always thought I don't want to be a nine that only has one good attribute. Like that's only good in the air, that can only stick in the box, a guy that can't dribble. That was my biggest thing. So, I mean, I could tell you my two favorite nines are Robert Lewandowski and Robert Firmino, mainly because those guys are still some of the most technical players in the field. They'll score with their heads, their left foot, and their right foot. So I guess that's part of my game. I want to be not just someone that you feel uncomfortable playing the ball to, because, oh no, he won't be able to control it. Let's just give him the ball in the box. So yeah, that's the biggest part of me, because I haven't always been a nine. So, I mean, that's helped me too. When I was younger, I was a midfielder. Always had the ball at my feet.
Huh. Yeah. So you were like a central midfielder, or were you an outside? Were you a winger? Or?
I was a central midfielder and then a winger. I was a winger with Surf. Because I was pretty small when I was 15. I was a late bloomer. And then when I went to Real Salt Lake when I was at that age, Martin Vasquez, the head coach, just was like, look, man, you're going to become a nine. And I didn't know what he saw. I didn't know what he saw. I was like 5'6", 5'7", really, really puny. I was like, how am I? All right, like, he's the coach. I got to do what he says. And I just worked for months and months to get bigger and then just get physically bigger. And then I got taller and it honestly, it worked out.
Yeah. Cause you're 6 feet tall right now, right?
Yeah.
And maybe it's hard to say, but are you still growing or?
Possibly okay. Maybe an inch.
Okay. I mean, six feet's a great frame for a nine for sure. He must have seen a growth spurt in your future.
Baskets. He must have. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about being universal, because I notice that's one of the things I notice about your game is just how clean you are coming back to the ball and connecting with your teammates. And some of your teammates are really also really exciting players. Tell us what it's like to play with folks like Ledesma. Luis Arriaga is I've noticed a pretty exciting player. And then, of course, Vladimir Mendoza. Lots of firepower. What's the chemistry like there on that team?
Yeah, man. All four of us, our chemistry is actually unreal. Because with Vladimir and we call him Pichu. That's his nickname. And then Luis, we've been playing together for 3 years now. And this is Richie's second year. So we've all known each other for a long time. And it's unbelievable. Every time we're on the field, it's just so much more comfortable. We always look for each other, know where each other's at. And honestly, it's fun playing with those guys.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
And the goals yesterday were ball to Pichu, Pichu to me to Richie. And the second one was an own goal. And the third one was ball to Richie from Pichu, back to Pichu, Pichu to me. So, I mean, it shows on the field. We love playing with each other.
Yeah, and you guys have put up a lot of goals, too. 42 for you on the season. I guess it's 43 now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, the Slovakia Cup, you won the Golden Boot. Congratulations for that. Scored all five of your goals, I think, in the Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan matches, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about the Ukraine and Czech Republic games. They were a bit tougher to break down. We beat Ukraine, lost to the Czech Republic. What was your takeaway from those games against tough, physical competition? Not that the other two teams weren't tough and physical, but I think probably fair to say Ukraine and the Czech Republic were tougher and more physical.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I missed that PK against Ukraine, and I would take anything back to get that. But honestly, very happy we won against Ukraine, because if we didn't, I wouldn't have been able to sleep over that PK.
I kind of forgot about that. I wasn't just being polite.
Yeah. Yeah. The keeper read me on that one. But besides that, Czech Republic was one of those, we knew heading into the tournament, one of those classic European giants that just would not keep the ball on the ground and just shoot it up in the air, because that's where everyone was at. Their guys were 6'2". I was playing against these center backs that were 6'7", and I was like, okay, just give me the ball on the ground. And we couldn't do that. So that was another one of those, quality wasn't there in that game. It was just, if we were going to win, it was just going to be scrappy. And they ended up just beating us like that.
Yeah, it was really
unfortunate. Yeah. I'm sure we all want it back too, because we knew, man, if we just kept on the ground, there's no way they could have just kept up with us.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Lewandowski and Firmino, great models for any strikers game. Are there any non-famous strikers you've seen who you're like, man, he's doing some stuff I can learn from?
Yeah, man, I got to think about that. But because I've been following Firmino for a while, like when he was in the Bundesliga, and I knew he was good. And then he made that move to Liverpool, and his first year was not that great. And now he just killed it, man.
Yeah.
And then I could say the same thing. He's really popular now, Gabriel Jesus. I mean, the same thing. He just broke through. And I love reading stuff about him in interviews, because kid's really, really humble too.
Yeah. He plays like he's humble.
Yeah. And honestly, same. I can't say he's not popular. Suarez is one of the most popular, but he's the same thing. I also really rely on work ethic too, because mm-hmm. that's one of the main things a striker can do, since you're not running 11 kilometers in a game like a midfielder. You have to have the most work ethic. And that guy is just a dog.
Man, that's the truth.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're really a student of the position and the game. That's great to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I promised you this wouldn't take very long. Big summer for you. You just graduated from high school, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Last I saw, you were maybe headed to Cal. Is that still on, and what's your next move?
Yeah, that's totally still on. I mean, Cal is the option right now. I mean, talking with my parents and my family, we just don't know what's going to happen over the summer. Kind of, at least right now, Cal is where I'm heading. Mm-hmm. We'll see if something comes up.
Okay. A lot of big decisions.
Yeah.
Good luck.
That's right.
Sorting that out. I mean that in a non-ironic way. Any chance we'll see you on the field for the Monarchs this summer with Richie? I know Pichu was on the roster. No, Pichu got on the field a couple weeks ago, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he got subbed in. I mean, I don't know, really. Lining up with like my schedule and stuff, it doesn't seem like it might work out. Mm-hmm. And I think they've realized that too. Every time they've had a game, I've been somewhere, been busy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's too bad for me, because it's a great way for me to watch, you know, watch a player like you. But it's not about me. Last question is, the U20s have a really good number 9 in Josh Sargent, but as everybody kind of knows, it's starting to look like he might have graduated to the senior team permanently by now. They have a bunch of attacking talent on that squad, but no clear replacement for Sargent. what are your chances of getting a shot with the U-20s? You've been playing with the U-19s. They kind of need a nine. You hearing anything, or you think there's a shot?
Yeah, I've been told that Josh would be the, I mean, I know Josh would be the perfect role. Josh is outstanding. But, yeah, I've been told that he might be with the first team and also might stay with Werder Bremen just to really get going in the Bundesliga. So I've actually been told, look, man, you might get a shot. And I've just been taking it. I'm like, all right, we'll see if it happens. If it happens, I'll go off. Yeah. At least try to go off.
Yeah. And that a shot would look like you being invited to a U-20 camp and training with them for a few days and playing a friendly or something, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. Just stoked if that happens. That'd be great.
Yeah, it seems like a really good fit, especially with the, you know, Richie's likely to be a starter in that squad.
Yeah.
There'd be some chemistry there. Well, anything you wish I was asking or anything you want to tell?
No, that's
folks
that's about it.
All right, Sebastian, appreciate it. Take care.
No problem. See you later.